Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Waveform Podcast. Fun fact, it's episode 24 of the year. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez Brownlee.
And I'm Andrew Manganelli.
And today with us, we actually have two more guests, both from Main Gear. Now, we'll talk more about Main Gear in a second, but we'll have a little introductions. Ron and Wallace from Main Gear, thanks for joining us. And I don't know, how do you want to introduce yourselves as the two most influential people at Main Gear, and what does Main Gear do? Give us a little breakdown intro.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having us.
Yeah.
It's a great pleasure. And I'm Wallace, CEO and founder for Main Gear. I started the business when I was 18 years old, actually down the street from you.
Yeah.
Right here in Newark.
New Jersey roots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Today we're considered essentially it's one of the premier boutique system builders in the world, actually. Mm-hmm. So we're strategic partners with NVIDIA, AMD, Intel, pretty much all the silicon manufacturers in the world. Yep.
Yeah, and so Ron, and I'm the marketing director here at Main Gear, lifelong gamer, right? So started gaming when I was in kindergarten, and just it's been a passion my whole life. And same thing with PCs. I've been in the PC space for, I think, at this point over 15 years, and I've been with Main Gear for over 8. So
wow, it's been that long.
Yeah, it's been that long, which is awesome. And like, honestly, I'm passionate about everything surrounding this. And so like, it's getting to do what you love is just amazing. And so It's really, really, really awesome experience.
So yeah. When he says we're passionate, he means that we like have really in-depth discussions about every single thing that we do.
It's perfect. It's kind of like when you're working in a video studio, like we are here. We're in the background having all kinds of conversations about what are good videos and like what makes a good video. So I imagine the conversations behind the scenes at Main Gear are like, you know, I wish this card would do this, right? You know, it'd be great if they had these CPUs that would actually fit with this, blah, blah, blah. And like, that's a conversation we don't have as much, but I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
I think it comes up here once in a while when big new pieces of hardware come out that capture a lot of attention, like the new NVIDIA cards that we're seeing with this new generation now. We just did a video on 8K gaming on the RTX 3090, and it was made possible by you guys because we had a Main Gear PC, and we had the card, and we had this whole build around it, and then we had 8K gaming happen. I think that's a lot of conversations happen in the studio, like, wow, 8K gaming. We can't really do that on these consoles that are also coming out this year. I'll ask you guys, what do you think of this world of PC gaming with 8K gaming and ray tracing and high resolution, high frame rate, and all this fun stuff versus the new console generation we're seeing come out around the same time? You guys talk about that?
Yeah. So there's always that conversation that takes place when a new console gets announced that PC gaming is dead, right? Mm-hmm. And companies like AMD and NVIDIA, they always have a card in their pocket just waiting to drop it, right?
Like, it's... Yeah, the timing seemed really good. Like, there's so much PS5 and Xbox like talk, and then all of a sudden NVIDIA just comes out with this and just has been dominating the
news. So you think
they
sort of held that in mind where this big leap was nicely coincided with around when the consoles are starting to get info?
You know, I'm not going to say they purposely aligned it because I really don't know, right? But maybe just the stars aligned. But it's, you know, I doubt that a company like NVIDIA would just sit on the sidelines and wait for consoles to just eat into technically their market share of PC gaming GPUs, right? So you know, that's the beauty of the PC architecture, the platform, right? It's always ahead. It's always up to date. So consoles, you have to, you're basically getting the latest and greatest. When is the new Xbox and PlayStation coming out? November, I think.
Yeah, like a month or two.
A month
like
or two.
Very soon.
Yeah. If you
soon.
Can get one.
Yeah, you're gonna, I couldn't pre-order, by the way.
Yeah.
But like, you'll get the latest and greatest then, but you know, the PC is going to be updated, mm-hmm. you know, in 3 months, in 6 months or whatever. So we'll always be ahead.
Yeah. I think the modular part of it always spoke to me. So I sure. built PCs in the past, and that was always the question as well. If you get something like a console, that'll be the same for the next however many years until it's slowly starting to, you know, reach its limit and the next generation of games is around the corner, then you have to upgrade everything at once. Versus a PC where you're like, you know what? I think my GPU needs have outgrown this machine. I'm going to upgrade just the GPU and I'll get what I need from that. And there's a bunch of advantages and disadvantages with cost and space and all that stuff. But that's the part I liked about it.
Although, let's be real. Every time you're ready to upgrade your GPU, then you're like, to get the full potential out of this, I have to bring that. And then you've just got a whole nother computer.
Yeah.
Usually.
You look at like the marketing messages right behind the new console launches, and it's 4K, it's we're gonna have ray tracing,
yeah.
It's we have like SSDs now inside of them, right? If you're a PC gamer, this is all old news. Mm-hmm. You've been playing at 4K and high frame rates and experiencing ray tracing now for a long time, right? And so that's a big part of it, is if gaming is your passion and you want to experience it on the highest level, like in reality, like PC is the way to do that sooner and better, right? And I think that's one of the key advantages behind gaming on the PC, is especially like all of us here, right? We're passionate about tech. We're passionate about being ahead of the curve with this technology. And so PC is the way to experience that in gaming, VR. Like the list goes on of what comes out first on the PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, VR is interesting. So we have the Oculus Quest 2 here. So this new, I guess you could call it a gaming console, right? It's its own system, basically. Yeah, it has its own store of apps, its own storage. It's a standalone unit. And in a way, I feel like I don't know if you've played with the Quest 1, but that was one of my favorite pieces of tech from last year. And that feels like a really forward-thinking, bleeding-edge gaming experience. What do you guys think of VR? I know you can plug in a Quest to a PC and use it as a headset, but do you guys have strong thoughts about VR and how it relates to gaming?
Yeah. So it's funny because I just received my headset from Valve, right?
Oh yeah. So we haven't gotten to try that at all. The Valve Index, right?
The Index. Yeah. You know, I actually got it a while back, and I just recently set it up, right? But just the controls and it's just incredible. I'm starting to play Alex now, right?
Okay.
And the experience is just so different than what you get by using a keyboard or mouse, mm-hmm. and sitting in front of a screen, or even sitting in front of a console, you know, in your living room. That I almost see, like, you know, kind of full circle. It's like it's not about what platform is best. It's just about gaming, right? So like, I feel like an Xbox is an extension of a PC for me. Like I almost feel like I should have an Xbox, even though I'm a PC gamer, right? And then if you're a gamer, you should probably try VR, because it's that cool. It's the experience is that different. Mm-hmm. So and it's the same thing with like a Switch, right? Like a Switch, if you look at it from a technological standpoint, it's kind of old, right? Like it's low resolution,
purely like spec wise. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
720p screen. Mm-hmm. But who cares?
It's
about the fun factor. It's about being able to connect with your friends and, mm-hmm. and play and sit down on the table here and kind of just have fun.
Some of my favorite experiences I've had over the last couple of years have been on my Switch as well. So you're totally right. Like, it's not limited by tech. And you brought up Half-Life Alyx. Like, that to me is the kind of like the thing that shows what VR can do in gaming and what I'm excited about for the future. Like that game is only made possible by VR. Like the experience that you have is amazing, and I'm excited to see what that kind of sets as a precedent for more VR experiences, because like up to this point there's been a lot of really cool stuff to do in VR. I have a Vive at home currently, and you know, especially when you have people over and like showing off.
That's the most fun to me.
Yeah.
Having people over and trying it for the first time. Because there's most people haven't tried a great proper VR experience. And
yeah.
Having people over and trying it is always really fun.
There's also something to about it being way more intuitive than like, if somebody's never played a game before and you hand them an Xbox controller, you're like, press the A button, and then they take their head down from the screen, look at the controller, find where the A button is, and then press it, and then have lost what it actually did on the screen anymore. Where VR, my mom's played it, my sister's played it, my wife's played it, they don't really play games, and they're just in and having a blast, like, almost instantly, and it's cool to just let anybody experience that, which is...
Yeah, it was a fun... When I talked with Mark Zuckerberg about this, like, that was what he got the most passionate about, was like putting someone in another world and like letting them actually experience what it's like to be in it. So there's a game, I haven't played the Half-Life game, but there's a game called Echo VR where you're like sort of floating around another planet, kind of playing this sport where you're like throwing yourself through space and grabbing a ring and scoring in a goal. And once you get the mechanics of that, you're not really thinking about playing, you're just in this other world playing. Totally have lost that you're in your living room between two couches and you think you're in this other world. I guess that leads to maybe a more difficult question for you guys, but I'd be curious what you think. If every time a new console comes out, people say PC games are dead, but then they aren't really, when would PC gaming actually be in danger? Or is it a forever thing? Because we have new form factors. We have the Switch now. We have VR games. Is PC gaming a forever thing?
Yeah, so... I've had this conversation, especially from a business survival standpoint, multiple times, right? Yeah. Specifically, I was never concerned about a new console generation dropping and potentially, you know, jeopardizing our business. I was concerned at one point when PC game streaming was the big talking point, right?
Okay.
So you know, this is when on its early stages, we're like, oh my goodness, what's gonna happen if nobody needs to purchase a PC again, right? Like, what do we do, right? Mm-hmm. Do we sell just workstations? Like, mm-hmm. how do we feed our families, essentially, right? Because we're, you know, as you guys know, we're making these really beautiful bespoke PCs. They're almost like art pieces in some ways. And, you know, the conversation completely switched to, who cares, because it's all about latency, right? And when you experience PC gaming, is all about obviously the quality experience that you get, the visual quality experience, right? But it's all also about the feel, the latency, right? So the mm-hmm. latency of a really fast keyboard and mouse, the latency now that NVIDIA is marketing really well, that I believe companies like Intel and AMD are going to start to market even more now. It's not just frames per second. It's how fast you can, just the competitiveness of the mm-hmm. of the experience. So, you know, from a network infrastructure in the U.S. at least, I don't think it's there yet for at least another 5 years.
I agree. I was gonna say I was asking, like, how good is that really? The best remote I don't even know what to call it. It feels like a remote PC is mm-hmm. the best way to explain it. But how good is the very best remote PC experience versus having the hardware yourself? It's not that good yet, right?
Well, it's,
I mean, it's impressive that it works.
Look, it might be good enough for certain people, mm-hmm. right? And it goes back to what we're saying before. If it's good enough for you to have fun, mm-hmm. sure, then it's good enough, right?
Yeah.
Like, I strongly believe there's a reason why, like, Stadia is not the hot thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. I bought the Stadia Founders Edition. I was like, oh my God, this is gonna, you know, I hope they don't do some, you know, crazy magical stuff that, you know, removes latency all of a uh-huh. sudden. But I'm like, okay, look, does it suck? No, it doesn't. Like, I used it at home. I actually hardwired it to my, you know, to my network infrastructure at home, my router, whatever. It worked great, okay? But then you go and use a PC, you're like, oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is way better.
Yeah, that's like what I've said that a million times. I never got that excited about Stadia because I just didn't think it was. I think my perspective on all this is almost every game I play is very competitive. At least I just get extremely competitive with it. And like, to me, I just haven't found, I mean, I used to play Call of Duty on Xbox and stuff, but once you get onto a computer and you're now at a higher frame rate, everything's like zero latency, anything, and there's just always like a far broader competitive like audience on PC just always in every game you play, I feel like. So, and then even when you take that another step into like esports, where as much as none of us are going to be esports players, like esports are selling these games as well. So like the bigger esports are always going to be on PC and almost never on console, unless you're talking like maybe some fighting games or like Smash and Tekken and stuff like that.
It's funny you mention that, because I know I'm thinking of like competitive gaming, and I'm obviously not a hugely competitive gamer, so I'm skewed on this, right? But the game I play the most is NBA 2K, and there's a whole mode where you can like go to the park and play with your friends and play against other groups of friends, and that it's always full. There's always tons of people there, and the number one thing everyone's always complaining about is how much lag there is and how much latency there is, and this guy's glitching again, and like how far behind some actions are to when you press the controller. But people are always there, so I think it's like a it's a different group of people that don't care about the latency and the competitive edge of having the smallest delay, and then will just play the game they like, versus like the games that are tailored to like, you have the best reaction time, therefore you should probably play on a PC.
Yeah, but in terms of like a marketing standpoint for some of these games, you see stuff, well, like esports is going to sell because it's just bringing more attention to the game when there's a big, I mean, I like... Yeah. When I used to play League of Legends, I went to Madison Square Garden, which was sold out to watch the like NA finals of of League of Legends. It was wild. It was so much fun. But then you even think about all the top streamers right now are all playing on PC also. So like the people who are bringing games to the like general audience are almost all on PC, which means those game titles are going to have the hype like all the time.
And what we see happen a lot actually is it's almost like... with competitive games, we'll give like Fortnite is like a really good example, even though you can't download it on an iPhone right now. But if you look at it, like it's almost like a gateway into getting to those higher levels of performance, right? So you start because you have a phone, so you play Fortnite on your phone, right? And then you want that better experience. You want to compete at the level that you're seeing your favorite Twitch streamer stream at, or content creator, or you just want to be better at the game, right? And so when you're talking about streaming, like, the definition of what good is has changed. So like when it comes to competitive titles, good is not 60 frames a second. Good isn't even 120 frames a second, because you get a competitive advantage as you get the higher frame rates, right? So that target is growing. And so there's different parts of the conversation. It's, you know, there's single player titles where it's a little different, right? But there's still advantages to it. But in the competitive space, that bar just keeps going up. I mean, there's 320 hertz displays that are going to be coming out, right? Like,
yeah. What is the, maybe the, you guys are the best to ask. What is the, I'm not a PC gamer full time yet. I still play more on the console. So if I theoretically were to get into some games that would really take advantage of high frame rates, what is the point of, what is it called? Limited return?
Diminishing.
What is the point of diminishing return for that setup? I'm sure you guys have like 240 hertz monitors at home and like the sweetest setups possible. Where would I start with that?
So for you or for the average listener?
Oh, good question. Let's pretend I have a budget of like, it's not even the budget. It's just like, where should I just stop going crazy obsessing over frame rates? I probably don't need a 320 hertz monitor.
So what's the point of all of this, right? Like, why do you play basketball? Why do you play a sport? And it's because of the competition aspect, right?
So how good do I want to get?
Yeah, so,
how do I really want to play?
Right. So it's really like, it's really what you can afford and how much you want to beat your friends, right? You want to, like, you want to have the best gear to beat, to have the edge over your buddy. So you know, but to answer that question about what's like the sweet spot, I would say like for monitors it's around like 240 hertz right now. I wouldn't necessarily plow down for a 340 hertz screen, because it's you know, it's very hard to differentiate between 240 and 340, right?
I was gonna ask, do you think you could tell?
Yeah
you could tell between 340 and 240.
Oh, like, hold on. Yeah, me playing a game? No, if you were to, I can't, right? Okay. But I can tell between 120 and 240.
Okay.
And I can definitely tell between 60 and 120.
Same.
Right.
I think there's a step to being able to tell the difference between that. And I think the higher the frame rate, or even just like the limit you're pushing goes, it makes it harder and harder to see that jump. So like if I was only playing on 60 hertz and then you put 144 hertz and a 240 hertz in front of me, I probably wouldn't be able to see the difference because I haven't gotten used to one of them yet.
Right.
If you're playing one game for a year on 144 hertz and then you play that same game on a 240 hertz, you're probably going to notice the difference because you've gotten so dialed into something.
Right.
Just like when you're playing Ultimate and you get a new pair of cleats. Like,
that's what I was going
to
reference.
You've gotten so used to it.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Or it, we, in Ultimate, we're so picky about the type of frisbee that we use. Like, we use a Discraft. If someone put a Whammo in our hands, we wouldn't even look at it and you'd just say, this feels completely off.
That's a perfect example. I always relate it back to sports because that's what I know, I think, really well. And it's like, if you're a beginner, like I would be with PC gaming, then you probably won't notice as much the differences between the higher frame rates or whatever. But if you're super into it and super calibrated because you have a lot of hours in, then you'll notice the small differences. So for me, like you say, the disc, like if you hand a beginner an Aria disc or a Discraft disc or whatever and tell them to throw, it probably won't matter because they're still learning to throw.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think when you bring that back to PC gaming, it's like you could probably start with a 120 hertz, 240 hertz monitor. You start with getting those frame rates and just learning the game in the first place. Then once you've learned the game, then you can spend the money on what you think will actually make you better.
So it's interesting. So like NVIDIA actually did some stuff around this, right? Where they got a bunch of people together that varied in skill set and then had them play a game on different refresh rates and saw what their accuracy was. So a lot of what we're talking about right now is noticing it, right? But there's the not noticing it. There's the I'm just better at the game now because I'm playing at a higher refresh rate.
Interesting.
And that's what they actually found is, and the people who had the least skill set, I believe, had the greatest improvement by going up because their skill ceiling was lower, and so they got a pro is able to adjust more to different environments. It impacted them pretty dramatically, but they have more muscle memory, so they're able to compensate for like a handicap, right? But a person who wasn't as skilled actually saw a greater increase in accuracy from the higher refresh rates. So it's like, it's not just about perception. It's about like actual results in a title like that.
Huh. Yeah. I'm sure there's like, I was also thinking about golf because in golf, there's like, again, if you're a super beginner, I could give you pretty much any type of golf club and you'd get the same wild variety of results. But if you hand a tour pro like a like two different irons, but one of them has a little bit lower center of gravity and they notice the one with the lower center of gravity has more spin and they start hitting it higher, they'll adjust their swing around it and they can make that work for them. But that adjustment only happens when you notice what's going on. If you don't notice what's going on and you make the same swing over and over, you're going to subconsciously get a better shot with the lower CG iron despite you not adjusting. So the equipment, I think that's kind of like when tech is at its best. It's when it's like unnoticeable like magic. It just works for you. You don't think about it too much and it just makes you better or have more fun.
That's actually funny because that's how, to completely turn this into a different subject now, this is exactly what we were talking about when we were talking about 8K gaming and how, okay, it's a crazy resolution. What's the point of this? But there's one thing about games when you get super high quality and like ultra realism that it's not that something looks bad that takes you out. It's that something just looks off and all of a sudden you're completely out of this immersion. Mm. So in 8K and with like ray tracing, when we were looking at that game Control, I think it was, that had all the crazy real-time rendering reflections and lighting effects and stuff like that. Those are just all little things that when you're walking through the world, it's just like, oh, everything looks normal. But if it wasn't doing that correctly, or if it was a little off because of a, you know, maybe a GPU that couldn't power it or just lower graphic settings or lower resolution, then you would start feeling less immersed. So 8K is beautiful, but it's also just bringing you all these things that you're subconsciously just realizing aren't a problem, which is weird to think
just
like I'm going to spend all this extra money for it to look more normal.
It's about the immersion, right? So like certain games you don't want to play in 8K because you want more than 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
Right. But like, you know, I'm not gonna say Flight Sim is a bad example because we haven't tried that game.
Control is like probably the prime example of like a beautifully crafted like piece of art as far as a game goes.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you're hitting, you know, 60 or 140 at that point because it's just about the experience that you're having.
Being in the world,
Yeah. So, you know, but for example, like Flight Sim, they're talking about like, you know, how it's crushing GPUs. And it doesn't matter because you don't need, you know, 200 frames per second in that game for you to have a great time.
Right? Yeah, as long as you're like over 30 in Flight Simulator, right. like that's what you need to enjoy. And like obviously you're flying slow, you're like, the game is different. And so it's—
simulator games are— I used to play a lot more simulator games actually, which is kind of funny. There's a truck simulator game I used to play a long time ago, which is like, I can't drive, I'm a kid, but here in this game, I can drive and I can drive around the streets and stay in my lane and all that stuff. But like, yeah, in those games, you're looking around at like the inside of the cabin and the textures on the road, and it feels more realistic when you get more information. So I'm not looking for 240 hertz there. I'm looking for detail. So that's one of those games that I think falls in the benefits more from resolution category, which is fun. But I want to turn the conversation a little bit on you guys. So what other tech do you get into after, you know, the gaming world? You get home from work, you want to get back into tech. What kind of stuff does that bleed into? Are you smartphone guys? Are you electric car guys? What kind of comes out of that?
So we've had, first of all, I've just converted Ron to an iPhone. So I just want to congratulate him on graduating from Android.
Okay.
Brief phone history. I had all the iPhones up to the 4. Uh-huh. Then I left for Android.
What made you leave?
When the 4S got announced and it wasn't bigger. And I was looking at all these big Android phones, and that's what I wanted. And yeah. I was disappointed. And then, you know, multiple Android phones, like big OnePlus fan, big Pixel series fans. And then the Pixel 3 was kind of the nail in the coffin for me of, I don't want like Samsung bloatware. It bugs me. It just annoys me. Like,
yeah.
I just personally can't deal with it, right?
At my core.
Yeah.
Just like, I can't stand it.
I can't deal with it.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like— I wanted a flagship phone, and I didn't feel like I could get the vanilla Google experience at the time, and like true vanilla Google experience in a flagship. Yeah. And so it was full Apple ecosystem switch to AirPods, Apple Watch.
Oh man, this guy's so great.
Pro Max,
like, that is a hard pivot.
Yeah, in like one go. And Apple Watch was part of the reason too, because Google's wearables are—
it's true.
Just not there.
I'm kind of actually in the same place. Not that I'm going to do this massive pivot, but like I really like the simple, clean Android experience. And every time I use a Samsung phone, I just keep trying to use the Note 20 Ultra. I'm like, I love this screen. I love this hardware, this battery, these cameras, they're so good. And then I open the two different clock apps and I'm like, why is this calendar so ugly? What is going on with this software? I've been a big fan of like the Pixels and Nexuses before them. But yeah, they're just not really the flagships that I want them to be. And as we all know, Pixel 5, maybe you don't all know, but it's not probably going to be the highest end bleeding edge
flagship.
Yeah,
I think it's rumored to be like a $700 like,
yeah, 765G, mm-hmm. like a mid-range spec, and they just focus on the software, which is cool. For most people, that's great.
Right.
But for me, I'm like, wow, I really wanted like the Note 20 Google Play Edition. You guys remember Google Play Edition?
Oh, I was going to say that. Like, I just wish there was a Google Play Edition for Samsung phones, because the hardware is so beautiful.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a beautiful screen. Like, it's just perfect. And then the software is just, you know,
I get sad every time I think about Google Play Edition and how that stopped happening. I wish I could have done something to save it.
Maybe let's start like a campaign.
Start a petition.
Petition.
Let's do it. I'm in. We got a signature already. What about you? What kind of phone? You had a phone stuff?
Yeah. So I'm using an iPhone, right? I just purchased the Surface Duo. That was my— for me, I'm like, you know what? I think Microsoft's going to do it. They're going to strip all the extra stuff. I'm going to, you know, I'm in the Microsoft ecosystem now with Office 365, et cetera, because of work. So I said, you know what, this is going to be it. And I don't care about the specs specifically on that phone. I just care about the, you know, the output of what I can do with it, right?
Yeah.
The dual screens, it's going to be cool. So I was a little bit disappointed.
Yep.
the hardware was so nice. Even though there's just big chins all over the place, right? It was beautiful.
It's
like the way it closes, the way it sounds. I didn't care about the camera not being awesome. I didn't care about the processor not being the latest and greatest from this year. I just wish they had really nailed the software part down. Mm-hmm. And it's not there yet, but I'm looking forward to the second version.
Yeah, so when you bought it, were you buying it as, this is going to be your one phone, or is this now like a work phone almost?
I was hoping it was going to be my only phone,
okay.
But I was expecting it to be my work phone.
Okay. Because we talk a lot about how it's kind of potentially being like the new BlackBerry as like this this isn't your main phone, but it does so many good productivity things that people will be carrying it on weekdays kind of things, and then probably not touch it as much at nights or on the weekends, and then have your iPhone, have your OnePlus, Samsung,
what you said though, so is like very close to like my review, my feelings about it. Like, there's a couple things they can do with Surface Duo 2 that if they really nail those things, I'm going to be really into that device. Because like you said, they nailed the hardware. It's awesome. It's beautiful. You close it. It's, you know, the full 360 hinge. The hinge is amazing. And even a lot of what Panos was talking about with like the dual screen experience, where once you get used to it, it's kind of hard to go back. A lot of what he said is true. It's just the software actual execution is a little buggy sometimes, a little stuttery, like not great. And that makes it hard to get in that flow with it. And I think if they stick with it, I hope they do, and the second one has, you know, higher end specs, a little bigger battery, maybe high refresh rate, they can do a lot of things with software to make it more fluid and more in the flow. And I think that would be awesome.
I think the only thing that's like a bummer with this kind of stuff is like they are still stuck with like what development from third-party app people will happen, right?
Very.
And that's the Android issue, right? Is that there's so many different form factors, unless it gets wild adoption.
Yeah.
Like the Microsoft stuff will get there and work really well, but like the other apps that you depend on,
Twitter, Instagram,
are not necessarily going to take advantage of it, right? Yeah. And so like that's the thing that I think is the biggest challenge that they have with it.
You know, it started for me just from the sign up. Like I was trying to sign up when I first turned it on to sign up with my Office 365 work account. That was my whole goal. It wouldn't accept it. So it made me sign up with my personal Live account. Then it made me sign up with my Google account. And then I had to individually sign up with my Office 365 work account and everything else. So it was really confusing. I'm just like, wow, man, I wish it was almost there. Yeah. But I'm sure it'll be there in the second version.
Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of people think foldables as a category are going to be stuck in this like spinning the wheels state until Apple makes one. Because if anyone can get adoption of a new form factor and get app developers on track to actually make new things for this stuff, it's a new folding iPhone, right? And so that's been like the question is, will foldables ever really take off without Apple jumping in? And if Apple finally does jump in, is that the inflection point where now this is the future of the, or not even the future, is this a new form factor we all suddenly want? That's about all I had to say about that. I just don't know when they're going to make one or if they're going to jump in, but we'll find out. We'll see.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Another thing you guys mentioned was, this is another segue I was going to make a while ago, but you talked about NVIDIA wouldn't really hold back a card or a new development if they thought they could just sell it now and, you know, maybe some other announcement comes out and then it's a good time to drop it. They're not really necessarily waiting. But something that made me think of was Tesla and the Plaid Model S announcement. And I didn't think about this too much, but if you haven't seen, Tesla announced the Plaid Model S, which is a triple motor Model S with a 0 to 60 in sub 2 seconds, allegedly 520 mile range, 200 mile an hour top speed, all this crazy stuff, sub 9 second quarter mile. But it conveniently was announced at Battery Day right after Lucid Air announced their four-door luxury $150,000 sedan, which had a 517 mile range and a slightly faster 0 to 60 than the old Model S. So people are thinking like, oh yeah, Tesla conveniently, right after Lucid's announcement, announced that they're going to one-up them with their Plaid Model S. I just thought that was fascinating. But do you guys think about electric cars at all, or are in that world?
I pre-ordered mine, like, well, oh, instantly. Yeah,
Plaid Model S.
It's the first Tesla that I think I'm going to purchase. I'm a big car guy, first of all. So like, you know, we drove in an M5 Competition Edition. Like, nice. I've been racing pretty much since I was 16 years old. You know, because I'm a car guy, it's not just the performance, it's the full picture here, right? I need the handling, I need the interior to be good. I need everything to kind of, like, if there's panel gaps in my car, like, it's, you know, I'm the guy that buys a brand new car and takes it to a detailer to actually do a paint correction.
Mm-hmm.
And ceramic coating. And
so our Tesla's a nightmare then.
You know,
or worrisome at least.
It it would really bother the crap out of me if I bought a brand new P100.
Yeah.
And there's like crazy panel gaps all over the place.
My car has panel gaps.
Yeah, see?
It
would drive me nuts.
I love this world. I'm glad you, okay. So I always think like, okay, there's two types of people buying this car. One, people who just like think it's a great car, fun to drive. You're gonna launch it and you're gonna floor it and your guts are gonna go in the back of your spine and you're gonna be like, this is the greatest thing ever. Or there's people who are like, interesting, okay, I have a choice between a couple other $90,000 sedans and maybe I'll consider this one. And then they sit in a Porsche, BMW, and they're like, never mind, this isn't the same thing. I don't want a Tesla, it's nowhere near what I want. And I've always been firmly in camp one, trying to understand camp two.
As I'm getting older, I really don't care about the 0 to 60 or the quarter mile. I care about the full experience.
You're like everyday experience.
Plaid Model S is really going to be.
Right. You know? So that's the funny part, right? So I read this the specs on the Plaid, and I'm like, oh my God, like sub 9 seconds. I'm going to buy this car and I'm going to rip all my friends apart. And when I race on a quarter mile. So, it'll probably be like my daily driver. And I'm looking forward to that one. I'm going to be okay with the panel gaps if I have 1100 horsepower.
That's does it overpower the panel gaps and paint correction that you have to do if you're like burning up 9.8 seconds?
I think so. I mean, there's so many questions. I mean, because like I used to drag race a lot, like the tire can spin on the rim. Do you guys realize that can happen on something with 1100 horsepower? Like, is Tesla going to beadlock the tires and the wheels to make that work and make it safe? Like, there's so many questions in my mind right now about that car that I'm like, I gotta pre-order it and I gotta get it because it's gonna be like the biggest death trap ever, or it's gonna be like the greatest thing ever.
That's actually one of the first things I thought when I saw the Roadster 2 that they're gonna do with the SpaceX package. Yeah. I'm like, you're gonna sell this to real people? Have you seen people drive in New Jersey? Like, this, that's a questionable move.
I cannot
move.
Imagine the parkway with the Roadsters on it.
That's going to be... So they're going to have this crazy spec in the hands of regular... Maybe when you guys get it, I'll have to come by and give a test drive, because I know I'm teetering. I really want to. I want to pull the trigger. I know I want to wait till Roadster, but also, come on. 0 to 60 and 1.9. It's ridiculous.
And I just had a baby, so like I need that backseat. That Roadster is just too gorgeous, and you know, no backseat on that one. But
yeah.
I think that's gonna be my first test, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
That's a fun first one, yeah.
Yeah. Do you care about autopilot at all? Because I know I like driving, and so I have autopilot and I very rarely use it. It's mostly let me just let it hold the lane for a minute while I grab something from my backpack next to me type of thing.
So I use it every day in my BMW. It's not full autopilot. We don't have the full feature set from what Tesla has, but it has like a lane assist and decelerates the car, et cetera. And I use that in traffic every day. So it's like, and not that I'm like on my phone or anything like that, but I actually do use that. I think it makes just the commute a little bit easier. And I think I'll definitely use autopilot.
Definitely. All right, we've chatted for a little bit. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll dive into the weeds podcast style on the new 30 series. I've been calling it the 3000 series, but it's the 30 series for sure. Be right back. Support for Waveform comes from Coda. So are you having trouble getting your remote team organized and on the same page? Or for that matter, is your own desktop looking a little chaotic with a lot of tools and tabs? If any of that sounds familiar, then you may be interested in Coda. So Coda is an all-in-one collaborative workspace designed to bring teams and tools together for a more organized workday. So Coda blends the flexibility of docs, the structure of spreadsheets, and the power of applications, and the intelligence of AI to make work, well, less work. So with Coda's extensive planning capabilities, you can stay aligned by managing your planning cycles in one location while setting and measuring objectives for key results with full visibility across teams. Plus, you can access hundreds of templates and get inspired by others in Coda's gallery. So if you want a platform that empowers your team to collaborate effectively and focus on shared goals, you can get started with Coda today for free. So you can head over to coda.io/wave. That's coda.io coda.io/wave to get started for free. So coda.io/wave.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's klaviyo.com/box.
All right, welcome back. So we figure while we have you guys here, and you guys know a lot about, you've had these new cards longer than anyone else I know. Instead of just going through benchmarks, because I mean, this is a podcast, you know, you could go look at a video and look at the charts and those are exciting. But I think the crazy part about this new set of cards is NVIDIA themselves has said, and we've all observed, that it's one of the biggest performance jumps in their lineups in a long time. And the fun part about that isn't just the frame rate numbers, but what you can actually do because of that performance jump, what that actually gives you the power to do. So let's just dive into that. I feel like we can go over some, like, you know, very basic numbers and benchmark stuff, but what do you find the most impressive from what you found from these cards?
So it's the truth. This is the biggest generational jump I've ever seen from one generation to the next. I mean, you're talking about like the 3080 compared to a 2080.
Right.
75 to 100% performance increase.
You just don't see that tech usually.
Never.
Yeah.
Like 30% or more increase over the 2080 Ti, like the high-end card that they had last generation, right? And so that is insanely impressive, especially in the context of the other stuff that we talked about. And I've honestly, you've been doing this longer than I have, Wallace, but I've never seen this happen before.
The closest to this generation drop was the 10 series. I see it by the demand, right, for our product. Mm-hmm. Like people tend to hold on to their PCs for around like 3 years. But whenever there's like a new drop like this, people just don't care if they had a 20 series or a 10 series or a 9 series, whatever. They just want it, right? So some companies, we call it incrementalism. They suffer a case of incrementalism. And this is one of those times where...
Sorry, I had a cough.
I didn't hear that. Some places, this is one of those times where NVIDIA is just saying like, hey, let's just put it all on the table. And let's just give the people what they want. And they delivered, man. Like,
I have a question about that. Why don't they do that every time? Like when you, because just the question of like, I always, in the phone world, it's always like, you know, Apple or whoever, insert company here, they made this phone, but you can tell they didn't go all out. You can tell they held some things back so the next generation they could make another improvement. You can tell they didn't put in this, you know, hole punch camera so they could do it next year. Is that real? Do you think there's companies who are going, we could do this, but let's not do it yet. We'll hold it for next year?
Yeah, next, I mean, I'm not going to specifically point out any company in particular, but it's a business case, right? If there's no competition and you have no reason to just launch your best, you know, this year, mm-hmm. and you can extend that into a roadmap that's going to last you 3 to 5 years and you're going to continue to bring revenue back in, I actually respect that because I run a company and I employ people, and you don't need to, mm-hmm. right? It just comes down to being a business case. Now, but from time to time, we'll get drops like this new, you know, 30 series mm-hmm. that's just like, you know, blows everybody's minds. I mean, the other day, I was having lunch with my brother, mm-hmm. and the waiter is like, he saw the Mangear shirt, right? And he saw the logo. He's like, oh my God, that's the gaming company, right? I'm like, oh yeah, it is. He's like, oh, I bought a mouse pad from Micro Center with that from that company. Hmm. I'm like, cool. He's like, dude, I can't get the 30 series. I'm like, what? you want a 30 series? Like, it's so mainstream now.
People
like,
everywhere.
Everywhere. Like, I would never, especially in New Jersey, like you see people having conversations when you're on the West Coast about like really hardcore tech. Mm-hmm. But like in New Jersey, like it's not really that common for like everyone to want a 30 series, for people to line up outside of a Micro Center and sleep there for a video card. I've seen it for consoles. It's nuts.
So people on the East Coast lining up outside of a store for a video card.
Yep.
That is wild. I've only ever, by the way, waited in line for one piece of tech ever in my life outside of a store. And that was the Galaxy Nexus on Verizon in the early 2000s.
Oh my God.
That phone had a line outside the Verizon store in Hoboken, and I waited before class to go get that phone. Anyway, but yeah, so you're seeing this like trickle out into mainstream like everywhere.
It's incredible. Like I've, you know, my phone has not blown up like this in a GPU launch ever. Like I've had people that say, dude, remember me from high school? Like, can you hook me up with a
difference? Oh no. Oh no. Wow.
Like it's on the day of launch, like my Facebook Messenger and my phone, like text message, it was just incredible.
Yeah, me too.
Right?
It's been crazy. The thing too that I think is important to kind of think about though too, when you compare like 20 series to 30 series, is that I think the average person undervalues the amount of research and development NVIDIA puts into their products and how big of a deal it was with 20 series that they came out with the first ray tracing solution for real time ever in this space, right? And bringing the power of AI to the graphics cards, right? So it's, we do, like, I love talking about performance and I'm excited to get into that, right? But it's more than that when it comes to what your game looks like.
Right.
And I think it's easy to get away from that and be like, oh, well, performance from generation to generation necessarily, but RTX was a huge deal. You're seeing the consoles are coming out and they're talking about ray tracing, and PC gamers have been doing this for over 2 years at this point. So it's not marginal, and it's an important way to frame the way you think about generational differences, I think.
Yeah, look, think of it this way. Like the guys who purchased an RTX 20 series, they're financing the 30 series, right? It's almost like when Elon Musk says that the Model S buyers are financing the Model 3 buyers, right?
Right.
It's there's an immense amount of investment that needs to be made to achieve what they achieved. So
yeah. So these people who are going to get these cards now, what can they expect to? Let's say someone now has a 2080 Ti and they get a 3080. Are they going to suddenly be able to play 4K at twice the frame rate, or are they going to suddenly see much more detail in their games? What's the ideal customer of the 3080?
So I think there's a couple different ways to kind of look at it, right? So the 3080 is going to enable you to do a couple things. It's going to enable you to play high resolution games at higher frame rates. So if you look at the previous generations, you're able to play at 4K, but you're not able to play on a high refresh rate 4K monitor, right? You're trying to hit playable frame rates in those games, especially when you're talking about enabling ray tracing on it. And so when you look at the scores and the performance you're getting, this is basically allowing you to play, in a lot of cases, over 100 frames a second at 4K. So, you know, the 3090, which was which is focused on like the bleeding edge, right? 8K and also content creators, to be honest, because it's got a ton of VRAM on it. The 3090 is a beast, and you're talking about, like, here are some examples at 4K of frame rates that you're going to get on the 3090.
Okay.
So Death Stranding, you're going to get like over 120 frames a second. You're going to get in Project Cars, which I know you're a big fan of.
That's my game. Yeah.
Over 120 frames a second.
Beautiful.
Control, as an example with RTX, you're going to get over 60 frames a second. So these are big deals, right? You're able to play single player games that have RTX and look beautiful at 4K at great frame rates. And you're going to be able to play over on high refresh rates at 4K. And then that doesn't even include, now we're talking about 1440p, and now we're talking about way higher frame rates for competitive titles, right? And so it makes a difference, not just in like the, I get to talk about how cool it is that I'm at this frame rate, right? But from our previous conversation, like, it makes you more competitive. You're going to get higher frames per second. It allows you to play competitively and not have to worry about like, oh, well, I want to be good at Valorant, or I want to be good at, a competitive game, and I'm going to have to play it at 1080p because
1080p, all low settings on everything to just make sure you get, like,
precisely.
It's just wild.
But this huge generational increase in performance enables you to do that with the fidelity, which is a a really big deal. And then not even alone talking about the new experience that 8K is, that the 3090 enables you to do, which is you have to kind of see it to believe, like, wow, this looks great.
It's really hard to explain to someone in words the difference between 4K and 8K. Mm-hmm. Like, whether it's a game or a video or whatever, like, I can say the word detail and fidelity and sharpness and clarity all I want, but, like, you kind of just have to see it. As far as I can tell, there's no real way to explain it other than that. Do you think there's a generation of 8K gamers that's going to start, like, now that will, you know, that will be enabled by these new cards that would not have existed before? Like, is 8K gaming a real future now?
Absolutely. Because it's real. I mean, you're hitting true playable frame rates in 8K, right?
Yeah.
Now, like, obviously, that's the niche of the niche of the niche, right? I mean, you need a really expensive monitor or a $30,000 LG television to be able to experience it like you should. But yeah, I mean, you're going to see a lot more content on you know, platforms like YouTube in 8K now. You're going to see...
If it can publish and process.
Yeah, it's going to take a month to process.
Yeah,
I mean,
it'll
be
a while. Yeah.
But it's real. It works. It's not like a corner case where NVIDIA says, hey, try this in this specific setting, this specific game for it to work. Like, you know, you have a television, you have a 3090, you have a good PC, you know, GeForce Experience would automatically optimize your settings for your 8K experience, and boom, you're playing in 8K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's, you say like the niche of the niche of the niche, and like, you have to have an 8K monitor and all this stuff. But another thing that's super interesting about the 30 series is the pricing on it, which has now gone down compared to everything. Last year was 3080 starting at like $699.
Yep.
And yeah. 3090 is still $1,500. But like, what was the 20 series Titan?
Oh, it was way...
It was like over two, wasn't
way,
it?
Way more than that. And no, you're right. Like it totally has changed the entire landscape. That yeah. as we know it, right? The amount of performance for dollar you're getting is absolutely ridiculous, and it's kind of unheard of, right?
Yeah.
And the timing is right too, man. Like this whole COVID thing really accelerated, you know, PC gaming. I mean, there's so many new people coming into the space right now that just stayed home for 3, 4, 5, 6 months that mm-hmm. you know, the TAM has expanded like exponentially. For us, so it's you know, on top of that, NVIDIA drops the 30 series, and boom, you know, it's just this whole new explosion of
It's making it way more accessible. Because then, I mean, we've only talked about the 80 and the 90, but there are plenty of people out there who are getting in that can buy a 3060 or something, and it's still going to be incredible.
They announced a 3070, right? And as part of the announcement, and that you're exactly right. Like that, I think based on their slides, is around close to 2080 Ti performance for. Like $500 in the presentation.
Crazy. Whoa.
Like, and we were all gushing over the 2080 Ti for the last 2 years. So like that's amazing. And that's where a lot of PC gamers are kind of configuring PCs, like $1,500, like somewhere mm-hmm. in that range is really a sweet spot for a PC gamer right now. And that's going to drive at 1440p, you know, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I know in smartphones, I just keep relating it back to what I know best, but like there's a whole lot of action at this like mid-range $400-$600 phone price where like if you look at the numbers, sure, there's a lot of enthusiasts and a lot of YouTube views on the $1,200 S20 Ultra or whatever, but at the end of the day, most people are buying much cheaper mid-range, mid-price phones. So you guys have the best perspective of like what are people speccing out their PCs price-wise, what's the biggest volume for that? And then what is the difference between last-gen playability from that price and this-gen playability at that price?
I'm going to get into the details. So, sure. You know, for main gear specifically, our ASP is around, like, between $25,000 and $3,000.
That's, like, your average
card. That's my average card, yeah. Okay. But I would say that if you're a DIYer, you're probably in what that range of what Ron said,
like $1,500 to $2,000.
Yeah. That's where you get all the sweet stuff for like it's you're not overpaying and you're getting like a really good bang for the buck, okay. Right? So like the 2060, the 3060, or that's not announced, but whatever it's gonna come out next, it's gonna replace 2060. It will probably be the best bang for the buck that you can get.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and it all, you know, it depends on like what you're looking for, right? So there's people who want a really good 1080p level of performance, right? Where it's still at 1080p looks better than a console because you're getting more bells and whistles, like higher ray tracing fidelity. And you got to remember, like, a lot of these things are like sliders. So like, yeah, the new consoles are going to support ray tracing, but if you look at a ray tracing game on the PC, it's not like, oh, on or off. There's components to ray tracing.
There's levels to this.
There's levels, right? There's there's shadow. There's ambient lighting. There's reflections, right? And so just because the console supports it, like, it might be just like, oh, there's reflections in this game,
right?
But you play it on the PC and you get all of the checkboxes. So you have to remember that it's even independent from resolution. It's and I'm sure you know this a little bit more, but there's various fidelity ranges on the quality that you get on a PC, from, you know, the what is the quality of the textures and, you know, God rays and all these cool things.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Support for Waveform comes from 1Password. So it's hard to come up with a totally unique password every time you need one, but it's what you gotta do to stay secure. Luckily, a password manager makes creating and tracking your passwords completely painless. So 1Password combines industry-leading security with award-winning design to bring its users private, secure, and user-friendly password management. And it does that by generating as many strong, unique passwords as you need, and then securely storing them in an encrypted vault that only you have access to. With 1Password, you just need to remember one strong account password, and it'll protect everything else from your logins, your credit cards, notes, office Wi-Fi, etc. You no longer need to keep a bunch of sticky notes all over your desk or reuse the same password over and over again. I've tried out 1Password. As you know, I switch between devices and phones constantly, and so using 1Password to just fill out things quickly and log into a whole bunch of stuff makes switching between devices a lot easier, so I'm all good to go once I sign in. So right now, our listeners can get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/waveform. That's the number 1Password.com/waveform for 2 free weeks. So 1Password.com/waveform.
Right?
Yeah, you like your games, but I feel like when you're, especially if you're building a computer, you just have that secondary, like, nerdiness of just like, I get to make all these changes myself, which sometimes could go very poorly.
I'm just remembering one of my early PC gaming experiences. So I this is really dumb, but I'm gonna tell it anyway. So I've only played so many PC games. I played a lot of Need for Speed back in the day, but there's this Tiger Woods PGA Tour game you could play on PC, and I had like this like mid-range GPU, no idea what it was. Like, I had maybe a $1,000 computer, and I could play the Tiger Woods game, and it would load the golf course, but the character was this like blocky bunch of like vectors. Mm. It didn't look like a human. It looked like a model, basically. You couldn't tell it was a human. So in this game, you could like sort of customize the character and like add hair color and change skin tone or whatever. And so I did that anyway, completely unable to see this character. Later, maybe a year later, I finally got a better GPU, installed it in the system, and I was able to play the game and see the character I designed and see him actually golf for the first time. And he looked like an alien, of course, because I didn't know any of the sliders I was dragging were doing. But I finally got to play the game and see the golf club and the human wearing clothes and not like some vector. And I'm just I'm picturing someone getting a 3080, like seeing something for the first time, like, whoa, I had no idea this is what this thing looked like in this game.
Yeah, if you're coming from like a previous, like a 9 series or something, or 8 series, yeah,
it's gonna look different.
Oh, I mean, it's huge. Literally, it's, huh. So it's like, I think it's double the performance of a 1080 Ti, which I think a lot of people might be coming from, right? So
yeah.
That's insanity, right? That's super crazy. And the other thing about it too, right, is what a PC game looks like is a moving target. So as we see consoles getting more powerful, it means that the PC is just going to go beyond that.
Yeah.
Which is a huge deal. And we're going to just see constant growth in how, like, look at Flight Simulator. The game is gorgeous and pushed the boundaries. I think the Crytek guys announced that, like, Crysis is becoming the game again, that they're remastering Crysis.
Oh.
And it's going to be like impossible to run again.
Nice.
Like continually pushing that fidelity forward.
Okay. Linus has so much content.
Can't run Crysis all over again. Yeah. No, that's, yeah. I've pictured this world of, like, you know, 3 year old card or 3 generation old card gamers, like, getting the 3080 and or 3090, whatever, and just unlocking this whole new world in the same games they've been playing and having way more fun. And that's awesome.
I'm like pumped for people that have a 9 and 10 series right now and getting to upgrade and not just getting the, like, what do they say usually? Like, if you can get a 30% boost, that's probably worth paying the money for an upgrade. Yeah. And to get like a 200%? 200% over that. A 1080 Ti is like, dear boy, like your computer's just not even going to feel the same anymore. Yeah. You're like, yeah, dropping your frame rate. Yeah, like a V, like a Hemi and a Ford Focus or something. Like, you're just, well, it's just going to explode.
That's a good point, because most people won't upgrade their monitors.
Yeah, that's
right. So, like, you have to do the full package. Like, you have to balance the monitor and actually build a balance system around the GPU that you're upgrading to.
Yeah.
But it's also cheaper now, too. So, you've got a little extra pocket money to go. Not that it.
So, you can
nice
get,
monitors are much more expensive, but they're also becoming way more, like, reasonable. Like, when you guys made us that Omen, we bought a nice monitor for it. Mm-hmm. I think it was like an Asus. 1440, like 140 hertz, which was not that easy to find then, and now that's like absolutely no problem. And we're talking about 4K stuff in 144. We're talking about 240 hertz, and now potentially 300 plus. Like, that's just,
yeah.
We're 1080 is almost completely dead. It feels like even when you're seeing like Shroud and these big streamers and professionals starting to play at 1440, who were just. Those are the same people who were using CRTs as long as possible, like in CSGO. Yeah. And like, it was real tough to switch to a regular, like a newer monitor now. Like, they're finally making that switch, and 1080 is just going to be out the door.
You know, you talk about like seeing a game like almost new again. I felt that way with, and it seems simple, but Minecraft coming out in RTX.
Yeah.
And being able to go back to previous worlds that I had made. And it was like almost seeing them for the first time with the realistic lighting and getting to walk around in an environment that looked like almost completely different and new because of being able to do those kinds of lighting effects. So it can be so dramatic and really change the, you know, immersion and experience that you have with a game.
Yeah. So I have a good question maybe to end on. So we all know about Moore's Law, and we know about tech keeps getting better every year, NVIDIA and these companies with these huge improvements. And now we're getting to the point where, like, you know, we talk about frame rates going from 60 to 120 to 240 to 300 something, approaching the limit of what we can even notice a difference. And then resolutions too, getting from 1080 to 1440 to 4K to 8K. Is there an end game to like realism before you have to go to VR to feel a difference? Like, when I get to 8K 240 FPS gaming, we don't need 16K gaming, right? Like, is that a weird question?
It's not. We need it. <I'm just kidding. laughs> But like, you know, the road to 1000 hertz monitors, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of what we talk about. And, you know, just 4K 1000 hertz, 8K 1000 hertz. Like, it's going to keep on just getting better and better. And, you know, it comes down to the manufacturing process. I mean, I think NVIDIA is at 8 nanometer right now. And then Big Navi, they're talking about maybe possibly being 7 or whatever. That will become 3D, right? So there's just so much. I mean, we have 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
And we'll get there, and we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Absolutely.
Well, and then like, it's not even just about like resolution. It's about new technologies in actually creating the image on screen too.
Yeah.
Dramatically changing it. So like, there's tons of room for innovation when it comes to basic things. Like, look what NVIDIA's done with the streaming stuff that they've done in broadcast. mm-hmm. where you can have your graphics card basically removing background noise in your room on a Zoom call.
RTX on, baby.
Like that, yeah. That's amazing, right? And so I think you'll see more of that, like background elimination when you're streaming, and that stuff's become more important to the average gamer. A lot more people are becoming content creators, not necessarily professionally, but they're streaming to their friends. That's part of how they interact with gaming, and gaming's kind of move past just kind of sitting on your couch or at your desk alone and playing a game. So yeah. There's a lot to look at it, how hardware can push that forward in growth. And that's where I think the sky's the limit. I would have never thought my graphics card would remove background noise, like ever, right? But now I'm like, okay, that's amazing. And especially given the circumstances right now, like that's like fantastic to have. So
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? You have so much computational horsepower sitting there.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you do with it? Like, what's the limits?
Specialized, yeah. And even the difference now between upscaling, because you talked about developers before. Developers have to make their games more detailed, and they can fit bigger assets and better textures and all this stuff in the games too. So that's going to get better. That realism will reach new levels as the tech continues to improve and everything gets better. So yeah, that's why it's fun being in tech. Everything just keeps getting better.
Absolutely.
Guys, thank you so much for joining me on the Waveform Podcast. It was a blast.
Thank you,
think anytime we can get guests in the studio, obviously, you know, having this, look at this nice socially distanced setup we have going on here. It's a fun time.
This is the first podcast recorded with the new
acoustic panels behind me.
Yeah, it looks awesome.
It's really cool.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us for
testing it out.
Hopefully it sounds good. And anybody have any questions, you guys can find these guys on Twitter at MainGear, but you guys also have your own Twitters, right?
Yeah, we're at MainGear everywhere as a company. Perfect. So it's nice and easy to find.
Yeah.
And we'll just look for me, Wallace Samples on Twitter.
Yeah, we'll put both of you guys in the show notes and MainGear and everything.
Just,
and,
yeah. I am Ron Reed everywhere, so.
Perfect. Awesome. Thanks again, and we'll catch you guys in the next episode. Peace.
Waveform is brought to you in part with Studio 71, and our intro outro music was created by Cameron Barlow.